The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, hello, good morning to you. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. It's the one in the middle of the week. It's Wednesday, the 9th of October, 2024. And how are you all keeping out there on a wet and blustery kind of morning across the northwest? It's very dark this morning as well. Didn't make it easy to get up for me anyway. I don't know about you guys out there. But anyway, we are now all bright, fresh and breezy and ready to go for the next 3 hours on the show. The lines are open for you right now. 086 60 25000. If you want to WhatsApp and text the show, you can send voice notes to that number too if it suits you. Or give us a call. We still like to receive your calls. 07491 25000. And if email is your thing, comments at highlandradio.com. And at least once or twice a week, we still receive correspondence by post, which is perfectly fine if that suits you. And it's just the 9 till noon show or Greg Hughes, Mountaintop Letterkenny. We'll get it one way or another. If you want to watch the show, you can do so on your social media or across Facebook. On our Facebook pages, Highland Radio News Sport and Obituaries on Highland Hub, and also on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. Right, let's look at the newspapers this morning. Actually, before we look at the newspapers this morning, I was off when this story was covered and I was taken aback by it because it feels like we're a very important service for us here in Donegal's kind of being used as a bargaining chip. I'm not saying that is the case. I'm just saying it can kind of feel like that a little bit because I heard the CEO of Emerald Airlines, Keith Butler, he said that the Donegal-Dublin flight could be scrapped because of the Dublin passenger cap. And I was a bit taken aback by that because it was just chucked out there. And I thought, hold on a second, this could be very worrying for people in Donegal. Obviously, it's very important for the Donegal Airport. It's incredibly important to keep it viable, I presume, and relevant because of all the interconnectivity and all that type of stuff. But also, it's an incredibly vital service for us to reach health services that are not available to us locally. Cancer services, for an example, and we've spoke on this program previously to those that help and organise the cancer flights effectively. And I just thought, don't just throw that out as if it's some sort of an argument to increase the cap. But anyway, what I didn't realise is when we were off, we'd already covered this story on Highland Radio because the news team had interviewed Conor McCarthy, the executive chairman of Emerald Ireland. He says that although the public service obligation, the route between Dublin and Donegal is a public service obligation, i.e. it's subsidised by the government because it's about connecting rural areas to urban areas and services and what have you, that it could be chucked under the bus, the Airbus, whatever way you want to describe it, that it could be chucked under the bus because of the passenger cap. And I thought, this is bloody significant, to be honest with you. Here's what Conor McCarthy said to the news team.
Our main concern here is the Dublin Airport cap, which has been put into effect, essentially is telling us that we have to reduce our passenger numbers next year because they're about 5% over the allowed maximum at the moment. That number is under review and submissions have been made, but in the meantime, we're quite concerned that the PSO route to Donegal is being included in that number, which essentially means we have to look on that as another commercial route. And there's it would obviously impact on our services to Donegal if we were to take action in that way.
Yeah, but what worries me about that is, I mean, obviously, these are commercial decisions that have to be made, but also you have to surely think of your customers and those that it might affect and the impact it might have on them. But anyway, that was Conor McCarthy, the chief executive of Emerald Airlines. I don't know if I'm a bit peed off with Emerald Airlines. I don't know if I'm a bit peed off with the government because PSOs are not exempt from the cap. I don't know what it is. All I know is that this could have a very worrying impact on people here in Donegal. But also, too, I think preference should be given to the Northwest's connectivity, not just for, obviously, cancer flights and what have you, but also because of, tourism numbers and what have you. Anyway, I don't know. As I say, I missed that story when we had it, and then I was shocked when I heard it nationally. So I wanted to reference the newsroom and the story they took on that a couple of weeks ago. Right, on to what's on the front of the papers this morning, by the way. If you want to comment on that, you can. You know the numbers. The Irish Times this morning, their lead story, new arrivals from Ukraine would not be offered a accommodation from next March under proposals being developed by senior government officials. officials. Now, this is, I think, the second or third front page story I've read about Ukrainians. It's not because I've any agenda to drive here. It's actually the front of the newspapers. The measure is one of a range being explored as the state tries to reduce the number of Ukrainians living in publicly funded accommodation over the coming months. It's understood that the options being considered by officials include the introduction of a new maximum stay rule focused on exiting Ukrainians who've been in state accommodation for the longest time first. Cabinet ministers were told last week that an examination of public leavers is underway to reduce the number of Ukrainians staying in state accommodation and incentivise moves to independent living, which of course, though, already puts pressure on an already stretched rental market. Anyway, a list of possible measures being discussed by senior officials also include ending accommodation for Ukrainians who earn above a certain threshold, informed by economic profiling, and so on and on and on it goes. An interesting story from down the country. It's an apology from a Fine Gael councillor. She apologised after claiming the entire US economy is ruled by the Jews, by Israel, at a Dublin City Council meeting on Monday night. Councillor Panam Rain withdrew her comments in a post on X yesterday morning after being forced to clarify her remarks during a debate. The council meeting was discussing a motion on the Occupied Territories Bill, which seeks to impose a complete ban on the import of goods and services produced in illegal settlements, including from Israel, from Israeli ones in the occupied Palestinian territories. I completely withdraw my comments made at last night's City Council meeting in relation to a motion on the Occupied Territories Bill. It was wrong and I fully apologise for it, she said. At the meeting, Ms Rain spoke about the previous... she spoke there previously being two superpowers, the US and the USSR. Then the USSR broke up and became just Russia. Things started falling apart and then it emerged just one superpower. That's America, she said. But the today, today that superpower is no more a superpower because you have China cropping up on the other side. But what they want, don't stand for is that nobody is taking a stance. USA or America should have taken a stance. She said the US could not take a stance on Palestine because the entire US economy today is ruled by Jews. Now, that was her feelings, and it's clear she's thought that out. But overnight, she completely changed her views, apologised, and withdrew them entirely. On to the Irish Daily Mail, and that controversy surrounds Sinn Féin. It is continuing, and will continue for the next couple of days at least. A planned Dáil debate on Sinn Féin's handling of child sexual abuse allegation risks veering into cheap, disgusting and exploitative territory, a leading child safety advocate has warned. Yesterday, the Dáil heard calls for time to be set aside for statements by Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald, followed by a Q&A session on the controversy surrounding a former press officer, which is expected to take place next week. Michael McMonagall, who was suspended by the party on foot of allegations of child sex abuse in 2021, went on to get a job at the British Heart Foundation the following year, boistered by references from two of his colleagues in the Sinn Féin press office who have since resigned. I wonder what any of you out there have furnished that man with a reference. Ms. MacDonald said yesterday, well, I know what I would have used the opportunity for. It's to outline in the reference exactly why perhaps he shouldn't have been employed. Ms. MacDonald said yesterday she's happy to debate the issue, but warned the government parties she will challenge them on their own record on sex abuse issues. She said, in the course of our statements, the Taoiseach, the Tánaiste, the parties of government will have to also make clear what sanctions they've adopted in cases where very senior members of your parties have written character references for convicted rapists and child abusers. And I see whereby there could be some risk that a very serious matter could become a political football. Because Sinn Féin are damned if they do and damned if they don't. They have to defend themselves. And how do you defend? You attack. But it is all on the issue of references for rapists and those accused of sexual abuse, and could get very unsavoury if it's not there already. Any of you watching the weather in America with interest, it's fascinating, it's startling, it's worrying to see this storm develop and how it's developed just south and west of Florida. It's a huge storm that's going to pound Florida tonight and into tomorrow. More than a million residents have been told to evacuate Florida as it braces for Hurricane Milton. The storm is set to begin pummeling the US coast with winds of up to 165 miles per hour expected last night. There were hopes it would weaken before making landfall, with parts of the state still reeling from Hurricane Helene's devastation 13 days ago. Now, the streets of Florida and the counties on the panhandle are strewn with debris from the last hurricane, and the concern is, of course, if they don't clear that, this is just going to be whipped up into just a massive mess that's going to cause incredible damage. President Joe Biden warned it could be one of the worst storms the US has seen in 100 years. He said anyone ordered to evacuate should leave now, as it is a matter of life and death. Search and rescue teams, electrical workers and suppliers were last night drafted in as hundreds of thousands left their homes for safety. Category 4 it could land as. An offshot of that, and it seems really irrelevant in the wider scale of things. Taoiseach Simon Harris, he was due to have a special meeting with Joe Biden, a low-key reception. That has been cancelled now for obvious reasons. On to the Sun this morning, and more children in need of surgeries for conditions other than spinal issues could be sent abroad. Vows to consider the move were made at a meeting of the Taoiseach health officials and advocacy groups. Simon Harris met four campaigning bodies representing children with spina bifida, scoliosis, cerebral palsy and non-spinal orthopaedic issues. HSE boss Bernard Gloucester and Health Minister Stephen Donnelly, who attended on Monday night. The two-hour meeting was described as emotive, with heated exchanges between some advocates and health officials. Whatever it takes to get these young people sorted, it needs to be done. But it's when you have the leader of the country and the leader of the health service executive in considering the fact that we might have to send these children abroad. Now, that gets them the treatment, right? But what about all the expense for families and how long they might have to stay there and people's jobs and all that type of stuff? I mean, it is not. Surely we should be able to address those problems properly internally. But anyway, maybe some of you out there are affected by that. And lastly, in the Irish Daily Mail, telly chef Nevin Maguire, who's on the show a little later on, by the way, he's warned numerous restaurants and cafes nationwide will close over the government's failure to cut the VAT rate for the hospitality sector. He claimed the failure to do so in the budget was a knife through the heart of the food and drinks industry. It comes after a period in which a number of high-profile eateries in the capital shut down, including Dylan McGrath's Brassiere 66 and Rustic Stone in the city centre. We'll hear from Nevin. He's talking about a new project of his, but also we'll ask him about that later on in the programme. Project Ballinahone Energy Storage is now in the planning process, and we're going to discuss that right now with John, who's of the Boncrana Fáin Against Untested Battery Storage. So I think given the name of the group, we probably can guess their stance on this. Right, so tell us as much as we know, what is planned, John? And good morning to you, sorry, in the first instance.
Yeah, well, there's a company called Future Energy, and what it's decided is that it's going to build up to 248 massive battery storage containers in Ballinahone, in the middle of the countryside. It sounds good. It's this battery. It's this iron air battery. And they talk about it breathing in oxygen and breathing in out oxygen. I don't know where the lungs come from, but the whole process is it's untested. It's partly tested, but it's unproven. It's not being done anywhere else. It's an American company called Form Energy who've been working at it for years. And they've suddenly, Future Energy, who are basically a wind turbine energy producer, have come upon this as a storage system. And they've decided that rural Inishowen would be a really useful place to do it, as far away from everybody else as possible.
And I presume the logic of it is that, wind energy that's generated that isn't used is effectively lost unless it's stored. And I presume they're looking to store the wind energy here so that it can be generated when the wind's blowing and then can be accessed by the public when it's needed, peak times, etc. I presume that's the logic of it.
Yes, it's for when there's a shortage. But of course, the system they're using, or they're planning on using, is iron water system, which, as I say, it's not even been tested. The company that's making the batteries has, if it has started production, it's doing well because the factory was only completed on the 19th of September this month. So there are no large-scale projects. They're being delayed everywhere, but it seems to be being pushed through here in Donegal.
Well, and in relation to being pushed through, I understand exactly where you're coming from on that, but there is a planning process, and they aren't able to circumvent that. They have to go through that process. But I understand what you're saying, that it feels like it's being pushed through. So what are the key objections here? Firstly, before we get into the stuff that we don't know, what we do know is the visual impact of this. Are locals concerned about how this might look, how it might, impact on the local scenery or views or what have you?
Well, it will have very little effect if you're just driving past it because we're going to put some trees up. But it's in a bit of a hollow on the side of a hill and in a bit of a hollow. So all around it, people's houses, they'll be able to look down on it and all these big metal containers. If you come across Grania's Gap from north, you should probably be able to see it. You know, it should be a great landmark in the area. it's hard to believe that they would have the audacity to actually put it here. And when we say, you need battery storage, etc., fine, but you don't go with experimental ideas. And also, about pushing through, you make the planning process, etc. Well, this company, Future Energy, which is a partnership between Culture and ESB, amongst their various public statements is they have a commitment to the local communities, to work in collaboration with local communities, individuals, groups, local representatives, and they believe in trust. We're transparent, honest, respectful. So they've got all these beautiful phrases, but the partnership, the joint venture, was only started in November 21. Some of their publicity says 22. And suddenly, they've managed to find this site and get everything ready. They're leasing land. They're supposed to have had various inspections done. And all of it without the local community knowing anything about it. So they're showing how trustworthy they are from day one.
Now, we obviously, as we always would, give Future Energy an opportunity to come on and discuss this, because there was a perfect opportunity now to publicly perhaps address any concerns, alleviate any fears, counter any points that you might make, such as it being untested technology. But they thanked us for our invite, or for the invite, but said this project, Ballinahone Energy Storage, is now in the planning process, and as such, we won't be able to discuss it publicly at this point in time, which I find really quite unusual. And then they decided to direct me or us to a website where there are frequently asked questions. It's not really how it works. But anyway, it is what it is. So we gave them every opportunity to come on and not even debate it, just outline and address some of these concerns. And some key concerns that have been identified by you and others: potential harmful radiation, contamination and pollution of local streams, destruction of wildlife habitats in the forestry area planned for deforestation. Could you be assured on any of those points, I wonder?
Absolutely not, because the credibility is about zero. They're trying to build a plant in Georgia and in America, and that's been put on hold, but it appears to have been put on hold. It's very hard to get information whilst the regulators look at it, because they're not happy with it. There's another plant, and it's referred to as their first pilot project on the 19th of August 2024. And in the Georgia, they're actually, the one in Georgia that seems to be delayed, they're using the modelling tools belonging to the Georgian energy company and belonging to Form Energy. Form Energy are the manufacturers of the batteries in America. And so they're actually using their modelling tools to assess whether or not it's a good idea. I just need to find the actual quote here, but the chief executive officer of Form Energy, and they're the company that's producing it, he was referring to one of these projects, and he said it would be a really useful field study to see what the project's like. I'll find his reference in a while.
No, I understand. I understand. I'm not going to go through the Q&As because it's not really up to me to do that, right? It's not really up to me to do that. They had an opportunity to come on and they should talk about it. I'm not really quite sure it does address some of the concerns that you've raised. Whilst I was listening to you, I was also sort of scrolling through this page to see if it does address some of those. One of them is, do these batteries emit radiation? All electronic devices that produce electricity current also produce electromagnetic radiation, including appliances in your home, such as Wi-Fi routers, broadband, laptops, mobile phones, and so on. There would be electric current flowing on the site, which means electromagnetic radiation would also be produced. However, these levels would not exceed those within the existing Trillick substation and would pose no public health or safety risk. So they're saying effectively that the radiation they would produce would not even exceed that's at the Trillick substation.
To me, that sort of sounds like, trust me, I'm a doctor. It may be correct, but I don't believe they actually know. When we first had a meeting with some representatives from Future Energy, the representatives didn't even know what sort of batteries they were talking about. They talk about them as bringing in oxygen, and then they were breathing in and breathing out. Wonderful terminology. It makes it sound really simple.
Like a tree.
What they're using. Yeah, and they also made the comment, oh, no, there'll be no acid electrolytic. So, you know, it's wonderful. We then pressurised them and they admitted there'll be alkaline, potassium hydroxide. Sometimes people use it as a drain cleaner. So that's a sort of chemical reaction. They also, as far as I'm aware, from some of my reading, they're also using cobalt compounds. Now, they're probably in very small amounts, but there is no trust there. They had a public statement, and there was an article in the paper. It looked as though it came from our group. It wasn't. It came from Future Energy. Said, this is the first such project in Europe. Now, that sounds great. Yeah, Europe, you know, fine. But it's a sort of half-truth. It's not the first project in Europe. It's one of the first, and possibly the first in the world, which suddenly, instead of being a nice development, instead it's an experimentation.
Yeah, and some would see it as us being chosen of a place of innovation, but I take your point. I'm just saying that others might see it a different way. So, John, in terms of the opposition to this, I presume it's not just you yourself. How widespread are the locals against this? Is there anything that can be said or done to, I wonder, to offset the objection?
No, I mean, it's unanimous. You could offset objections if you thought the thing was safe. But, by the way, I found the comment by Matteo Giammarillo, the chief executive, and he's a project they hope to complete in 2030. And he said it will provide a meaningful test of the technology in real field conditions. So it sounds as though we're a laboratory here.
Yeah. Again, that could be referencing, you know, transporting the power there and releasing it and the cost benefit and all that kind of nonsense. But I take your point. I take your point. It's an open-ended statement that could be interpreted many different ways.
Well, also, the other point that was made to us that there's been a problem. They've been working at these things from 1977, I believe. And So they're only just getting something working of some description. But one of the problems was the anodes and cathodes deteriorated, and also the emission of hydrogen. And so we queried this at one of the meetings, and they were, it'll just disperse naturally in the air. Well, these batteries are going in massive freight-style containers. I'm not quite sure how the hydrogen is going to disperse. Mm. And also, I wonder how they're going to put it if a fire happens. You're going to totally destroy the rivers nearby. You're going to destroy the Mill River. It's all going into the into Lough Swilly. It'll be going up the Cranon River. There are too many dangers involved in it. It's too soon. If you want to experiment, by all means, but not in this job, and not in people. Oh, they also, one of the comments by Future Energy was, oh, no, it won't devalue property in the area. I mean, are they in the real world? Big battery plant.
Yeah. And I mean, like, maybe this is somewhat new technology, but I do follow some of this type of stuff to some extent, and I do know the likes of Elon Musk's company Tesla do produce and transport massive battery storage containers effectively that are used to store this type of energy. But maybe this element of battery storage is new and doing it in this way. Right, okay, John. In terms of, like, I have information here in a public meeting upcoming. Is this separate to, is there a public meeting upcoming on this issue?
Yes, yeah, it's at school, Evergon, and
I have it here. It's on Wednesday, 16th of October at 7:30 p.m. in Scully Sigon, Buncrana. That's the Sacred Heart Building behind St Mary's Oratory Lower School. Was Future Energy invited to that meeting, or is this just mainly for locals to share ideas, potential concerns?
Well, they haven't been invited to the meeting, as far as I'm aware. I don't believe we've actually been invited to any of their project meetings.
Understood.
Either.
Yeah,
and they also have a whole team of community awareness workers. We never see or hear from them. But there's a lot going on here. It's not just the actual danger of contamination. The wildlife, I mean, when I was a child in this area, you saw quite a bit of wildlife. I moved back here to live 30-odd years ago, and the wildlife had gone down. I could see it over the years. Now it's coming back up again, and we've got red squirrels in this area. Never seen them before. We've got pine martens. We've got a lot of mountain hare. All of these are going to disappear.
Potentially, yeah. I get you.
Also, right. the interference and the noise level from these batteries. The people here have had enough problems over the years, recent years, with houses and things, without making matters worse. Sorry, going on a bit.
No. Listen, it's important you get the views across. It's our opportunity to have this conversation. All right, John, listen, we'll stay in touch with it as the planning process progresses. Maybe there's other people in the area that want to speak to us as well and share their concerns, and we extend an invite. I would love to put all of the points that you've been making to a representative from the company, but they've chosen to direct us to a website. But for now, John, listen, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it. That's John there, who is part of the Buncrana Farm Against Untested Battery Storage, which seems to be some of the one of the key arguments as to why it shouldn't go where it's going. A caller says, who owns the land? Is it being rented or owned by the battery company? Another, good morning, Greg. If these batteries go on fire, they produce toxic fumes and smoke and take days to put out. They can burn underwater. It'll take 400 years to produce the amount of batteries the world needs. They believe this is just money-making for the billionaires to rob the poor and to pay the rich. I'll stick with a couple of comments on this before the break. The issue I would have with this is that the technology is untried and untested on a commercial scale anywhere in the world, and there are no Irish or European standards that could check this. The biggest risk is an electrolyte leakage, which is a dangerous alkaline, and if that gets into the water course, it is caustic and can ruin the water supply for Buncrana. Should these be built so close to homes, within a couple of hundred metres, asks another caller. And another just before the break. Well done on John. Well done to John on highlighting this. Would that many batteries not be dangerous in the event of a fire? Now, the Ditch reported that Donegal County Council secretly altered more than 20 homeowners' applications for remediation under the state's defective concrete block scheme without their knowledge. The altercations or the alterations made it seem like independent engineers hired by homeowners who had recommended extensive repair options had made the same recommendation as housing agency hired engineers who mostly recommended cheaper repair options. We've contacted the council for comment on this. They have said subsequently that in all these cases, they say Donegal County Council has since changed all the applications back to their original states, claiming the widespread changes were due to a minor technical glitch. I think it's quite a substantial glitch in inverted commas, because it would have had an incredible impact on people's lives. A number of guests to discuss this. Marty, an affected homeowner. Your reaction to this this news, Marty? Good morning to you.
Well, I'm disgusted, obviously. And we have heard that they have been calling it a minor technical glitch. To them, it might be a minor technical glitch, but to us, this is huge. You know, to find that our original stage one confirmation of eligibility applications have been amended. Somebody has literally removed what our original engineers have recommended for our homes. In my case, that was option one, demolish. And then they have inserted instead the recommendation, which, funnily enough, the housing agency government-appointed engineers ended up giving me when I was downgraded, in his place. So it looks as if my original engineer recommended that my home should be option three. That's just, you know, that's not a minor glitch to me. And the other thing is, this minor glitch is in way more than 20 applications. You know, we have a downgraded Facebook group now of 64 members. The huge majority on that page have had this problem. And we know there's well over 100 homeowners who have been downgraded. So we suspect that there's a lot more. But to say that it's a minor technical glitch is just leaving us with so many questions. It's actually scandalous that they're actually even calling it that, when it's directly looking as if every single engineer that we engaged happened to recommend what the housing agency engineers downgraded us to.
Yes, and it's incredibly unfortunate, isn't it, that this minor technical glitch happened to disadvantage homeowners and sort of align with what the housing agency seems to want.
This is it. You know, what are we meant to think here? Is there a collaboration between the housing agency and the council? You know, is that an outlandish statement to make? I don't think it is. Mm. Not when you have these sort of things going on and you have the downgraded homeowners like myself and the group that is ever increasing, shouting from the rooftops that there's something wrong here, that there's something hugely wrong with what's happening with the downgraded homeowners. These downgrades should not have happened anyway. And now we have minor technical glitches like this.
Is it possible there are people who were downgraded, accepted it and proceeded, and maybe they're the victims of this technical glitch?
Well, that's the other thing, Greg. That's something we're trying to find out at the minute. We think very, very few people who've been downgraded are accepting it. We think most people are appealing, you know, and we're trying to find the numbers of this. We have 100% redress counsellors looking into this at the minute. We think, you know, at least 90% will be appealing this, because what's happening to us is wrong. Every decision is wrong. You know, they didn't consider pyrotite, so the real cause of the deterioration of our homes hasn't even been considered. So we've been fighting this issue anyway. But no, we're stuck here with this. This one is just appalling to us.
Yeah, you did speak to someone, did you not, though, high up in Engineers Ireland, that stated that pyrotite was being considered?
He didn't. We had a protest recently, a couple of weeks ago, where myself and an engineer as well that is helping us, we got to speak to Director General of Engineers Ireland, Damien Owens, and we relayed all our concerns to him. And we did say to him that pyrotite was not being considered. We laid everything out. It's actually the housing agency. The housing agency keep releasing a statement saying that they are taking into consideration the presence of pyrotite. Well, the downgraded homeowners group now of over 60 members are shouting at whoever is going to listen, we all have pyrotite in our blocks and you did not consider pyrotite. So every single decision here is flawed.
Jacqueline's with us as well too. Jacqueline, yeah. You might remember that phrase, do not use under enhanced scheme, and I'm speaking to the listeners there. I know, Marty, you'll know all about this. Yeah. Jacqueline, that was your application that had that written across it in bold, isn't it?
Good morning, Greg. Thanks again for just for having us on the show and for raising the issue again, once again. Yes, a couple of us did have that across in the portal. So in my situation, Greg, the Donegal County Council couldn't confirm eligibility of stage one, and they asked us, you know, had we any further information that we wanted to make before passing us over to the housing agency. So my engineer, very, very competent engineer, who we sourced from Donegal County Council list of engineers, came out to our house. He did a revised report that showed further deterioration to our home. And he had, in our report, he had said that with levels of pyrotite outside European specifications, he said that there was other presence of other deleterious materials. The rising walls were damaged. He had photographic evidence. He had done a full revised report showing that I think there was something like 19 new cracks from the first report. When we went onto our portal, it said, do not use under enhanced scheme. So basically his revised report, they had it in Donegal County Council portal, do not use under enhanced scheme. So what does that say? This whole passing us over to the housing agency, in my opinion, was a futile exercise. They already had their minds made up what our decision was. And the PDFs that we found now with the option that Marty's talking about, that's all, in my opinion, there's collusion, there's deception, we are victims, and it's... Marty used the word disgusted. We're disgusted. We're angry. I don't know what to say.
Yes, and I understand how you might feel, but we are waiting on a statement from the council, and I must say that they probably would reject that, no doubt. They reference this as a minor technical glitch, but you're coming from a homeowner's perspective, and it's going to feel different to you. Katrina's with me as well. Katrina, what's your say on this? How are you affected?
Hi, Greg.
Good morning.
As Jackie said, thanks so much for having us on again. You're very good. Greg, I spoke to you already recently after my application also had the do not use under enhanced scheme. So I had additional testing done on my property, which showed high levels of iron sulfides, pyrotite being the main one. And I submitted that with my application, and it was saved as do not use under the enhanced scheme. And in my downgrade, there was absolutely no reference to it. So I strongly believe that it was not included, despite the County Council rejecting that. So now to have this new information is just shocking. And it really, as the girls have already said, it really does seem that the council, the level of corruption involved
we have to be really careful with our language. The council would completely reject that there's any corruption going on. And they have said that there was no corruption at all, that this was this was down to a technical glitch, and the applications have been returned to their original format. But as I say, it's obviously an incredibly emotive issue. But I hope you understand that whilst you might feel that, and you can say that on maybe even on social media, whatever, we can't talk of corruption until such time as that's properly determined. But anyway, listen, I just have to say that it doesn't take away from your point of view. Back to you though, Marty. What is this all about, really? Does this come back to... Well, firstly, I mean, obviously, this is going to further undermine trust in this process, Marty.
Yeah, it has. We have so many really disappointed people. People are so stressed with this experience. Some people have been private messaging me, and they're just they're so down about it. They don't know where to turn or what to do. We have everything ringing in our ears now. You know, it's bringing back everything. Paul Gallagher and Dara O'Brien's emails, you know, the Attorney General and Minister Dara O'Brien. That's ringing in our ears. The do not use under enhanced scheme. the engineers that downgraded our home, they never visited our properties and they were meant to assess the extent of damage to date. And some people's reports were over 4 years old. You know, nobody visited our homes. Pyrotite has not been considered and they keep saying it is. And we're all shouting that it's not been considered. So the internal sulphate attack, which is the proven cause of the deterioration of Donegal homes, has not been considered in any of the downgraded.
So are you of the view that this all, and I've put this question to a number of people on air and it had different responses to it. Are you of the view that this only, everything needs to be stalled at this point, unless the homeowner themselves is satisfied with how things are progressing until we get the updated IS465?
Well, there's two things I'd like to say on that. You have Geological Survey of Ireland and you have Engineers Ireland, and they have both said that this IS465 is not fit for purpose. So to me, it's pure stupidity that it's allowed to continue and decisions are being based on it. So that's one point of it. But the point for the downgraded homeowners is we engaged original IS465 chartered engineers, thoroughly assessed our properties, made their decision based on their assessment and alongside the scientific analysis that they had from our core samples. They made recommendations that we got our heads around. You know, your house is deteriorating. You have to get your head around that. Your house has to be demolished. We want these original recommendations reinstated because we're going round in circles here and some people have been on this merry-go-round for over 4 years.
Yeah.
What's happening here has stalled people's lives. You know, this is our biggest financial asset and the roof over our children's heads. I have two small children. The amount of time this is taking away from them is, I'm so angry about that more than anything.
And
we want the original engineer's recommendations reinstated.
It's remarkable that we find ourselves in this situation. And I'm not trivializing this in any way, state or form. And it's a credit to you three that I'm saying this right. But like we should be talking about, you know, what our kids are getting up to and what watching on Netflix, not, you know, three women trying to get their house rebuilt and talking about, and men, of course, and talking like engineers. It's crazy, isn't it, Marty, that we've got to the point whereby your lives are so distracted that we can't get on with the regular stuff in lives. And as I say, finding ourselves talking like almost qualified engineers, such is the level of advocacy you happen to go into for yourselves.
Yeah, that's exactly, it's exactly it. My four-year-old was walking around the gable of our house the last day and she said to me, "Mommy, look, there's a big crack." And she has blinkers and the eyes of a child. She doesn't realise that the whole house is cracking around her and she's big cracks in her bedroom. You know, she just saw this big crack in the wall and she thought this was pretty exceptional, so she pointed it out to me. She's going to start to notice all the cracks now and she's four, you know, and she's going to pick up in conversations around the house that are directly relating to this, because this is a huge main topic of conversation quite a lot in our house, and how could it not be? But the other thing is, Greg, we have a really strong group now, over 60 downgraded homeowners, and we are working together, and together we can see these inconsistencies and these flaws and these inadequacies. So we're working together. We are exploring every single avenue now, but we are really we've been so let down. You know,
I just
want
to ask,
so let down, and people are in desperate ways.
That's the important side of it as well too, because people are trying to get on with their lives and also trying to campaign and deal with all this stuff. Jacqueline, what would you like to see done now? What would need to happen to ease the concerns? And I'm on about the concerns specific to this, there's massive concerns that are going to take a full rebuild to resolve. But Jacqueline, what could happen now that would be progress from your perspective, that will be moving in the right direction, that maybe you'd sleep a little better at night, if that makes sense?
So look, like Marty and like Katrina, this has taken consuming so much of our time. I mean, we've all submitted our appeals, and Greg, that is not an easy process for anybody to submit an appeal. Like, well, my appeal went in June, and there's still, like, there's an appeals panel there apparently, but we still haven't heard anything back. I know that you asked Marty the question, would you like all this to be stalled until the revision of the IS465? And a lot of the homeowners would like it to be stalled, because obviously there will be more scientific, maybe decisions based on science.
But the cause, I presume, would have to be re-examined to ensure that they're looking for all of the unwanted materials.
That's the thing. I mean, I have been on this merry-go-round since 2021. I really can't. I think it would be so unfair to actually ask us, the people from the 9-10 scheme that have been downgraded, to go back to the drawing board again.
Yeah,
like, how much more can we take? It's really frustrating.
Okay.
And, I mean, with the stalls. So for us, I think the only thing that I would that would ease me is that our original engineer's options being reinstated.
Yeah,
let us move on.
No, that makes
sense.
You
know, let us rebuild. Yeah.
I understand. No, I have a better understanding of the impact of that question now. Thanks for that, Jacqueline. Thanks, Marty. Thanks,
okay.
Katrina. All three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time.